Bryce's worst nightmares come true when she discovers Hunt and his fallen comrades have been secretly working to purchase a shipment of synth from the Viper Queen. Micah and Fury intercede, with the latter escorting her friend home, where Rune watches over her. While Hunt mourns the pain he has caused Bryce, Bryce spirals, causing her to question whether anything she and Hunt had was real. It is only when Fury brings news of Sandriel's possession of Hunt as her property that Bryce reminds herself that Hunt is her friend and she does not want him to return to the Archangel he loathes. Despite Bryce's efforts to persuade Sandriel to sell Hunt to Bryce, Rune intercedes, only for one of Bryce's many secrets to be revealed to the world. The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
This is part one of this week's episode. Stick around for part two, which releases on Thursday.
Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, with a special shout out to our February 2024 Tropy Wives. Thank you, Laura, Rachel, Beatrice, Amber, Catherine, Veronica, Anne, Jackie, Violet, Nicole, Amelaide, Jessica, Helen, Danica, Carissa, Colleen, Alexa, Sam, and Allison. To learn more about becoming a Tropy Wife, visit patreon.com/booktalkforbooktalk. Thanks, Tropy Wives!
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we're exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series. This is Jack.
And I'm Amy. This week, we're discussing chapters 65 through 72 in A House of Earth and Blood.
This week, we ask ourselves, has this moment in the plot been earned emotionally and structurally?
Themes we see in this section include possession and ownership. We ended last week's episode after Hunt has lost his wings, Bryce has tried to care for him, and they see a video of the synth trials that Danica stole. While they do get their sexy on, afterwards, Bryce steals away in the night to go back to her old apartment while Hunt sleeps. Bryce then gets a call from Therian about a synth deal taking place on the docks. We pick up at that point in chapter 65, where Therian and Bryce are on the wave skimmer trying to approach the synth deal from the shadows. And like all short chapters in this novel, a big reveal takes place. Hunt, dun dun dun, is involved.
She does love to do that. It's like, here's a short chapter, here's a big truth reveal.
Yep.
Love SJM. Love this book. I think she's done a great job. And these chapters make me kind of be like, but what? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
One of which is, why did Therian not contact Hunt?
Yeah.
Why did Therian just contact Bryce?
It's an excellent question.
And
did he assume Hunt and Bryce were together?
Yeah, but that's Therian is Hunt's connection.
Yeah, that's also true.
Part of me was wondering, maybe Hunt was orchestrating it? I don't know. The Therian of it all, I'm going to question later on, too. So
okay.
We'll get there. Also, I love how Bryce, you can tell, is feeling overly confident in this at the beginning. She's even shitting on the Viper Queen's style. Quote, "It's the Viper Queen," Bryce said. "No one else in the city would have the swagger to wear that ridiculous purple raincoat." The mindset that she's at, like, it's you. SJM is doing a great job of building where Bryce is. Mm-hmm. Like, she is so Bryce. She is peak Bryce-ing right now. And, you know, she sees fashion. She sees an equal. And then it's all about to be destroyed.
Yep. There is more about Bryce's perspective I want to say, but I'll leave it for the end of this chapter. A lot of plot in general is happening in these chapters that we're analyzing today. And while there might not be a lot we would normally analyze, I do want to call out how well SJM is playing up the drama, at least from my perspective. And that drama is built up through the use of irony. Now, if you didn't know, irony is considered a writing device. It is a technique that is used in writing. And it's not just because people have a sense of humor.
People don't understand irony all that well. I would like to give a quick example.
Yeah, go ahead.
Of like true irony would be someone saying, hey, I don't want any rain on my wedding day at all. I'm going to go to the driest place on the planet. And then it rains.
Yeah, at the driest place on the planet.
Yeah, yep. I feel like sometimes people don't get irony.
Yeah, I agree.
And I blame Alanis Morissette for that.
I agree. Yeah. Bryce thinks about calling Hunt and begins to pull up his contact info. And as she's ready to hit dial, she sees Hunt. Like, ugh, drama. Another piece of irony for me, she's using her cell phone to take pictures of the boat. And we've seen the cell phone used as a device to bring Hunt and Bryce closer together.
Yeah.
And we're going to see the culmination of that later in this episode.
Yep.
And at the same time, it is now setting up the stage for them to be torn apart.
It is beautiful. I love that fact there.
To top it all off, before Bryce realizes that Hunt is on the boat, the Viper Queen says, I think this is the start of a beautiful friendship. And for me, what's ironic about this is that Bryce and Hunt did have a beautiful friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And in this moment, that beautiful friendship is being deconstructed. It is about to be obliterated. So I even have goosebumps now. I'm just like, ugh, kill me now, SJM. Like, the irony.
She really does, like, draw these things out and does a good job. And I love, okay, in writing, one of the things you can tell by a good book is that you cannot delete a scene earlier in the book because it's all needed. I think this moment is so well done because Bryce can't recognize Hunt right away. Other, because he'd have his wings. So he needs to not have his wings, which means he had to have them chopped off, which means there had to be reasons for them to chop off. Right. And you can go backwards to see why it led to this moment. And it's just one of those chef's kiss moments. And again, you cannot delete a moment earlier because then this would not make sense.
Yeah, I honestly think everything in this book leading up to this moment was purely for this moment.
Absolutely.
Every thread was tightly woven so that we could be here and Bryce could be torn apart. And it is devastating.
Yep. There's no pointless moment in this book.
Nope. Maybe except for the scenes with the knock. But even those aren't pointless because it's telling us how he's going to die.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I do want to note before we move on to the next chapter that before recognizing Hunt and realizing who he is, Bryce observes his figure and can tell that his body language is demonstrating, quote, clear disgust and displeasure. And so, like Jack was saying, she is ultimate Bryce right now. She is peak Bryce. She is in her element. But the second she recognizes that Hunt is on that boat, all previous observations are gone.
Yeah.
She can't retain this information in association with Hunt.
Yeah. And I'll even say that those moments, although she doesn't necessarily reflect on these descriptions of Hunt in this moment, but in just a few chapters, we're about to see Bryce not necessarily forgive him, but like fight for him. I think this moment, and she never like looks back and be like, wow, that he really didn't want to be there.
Right. Right.
Wow. I can see that he hated that moment.
Yeah.
But subconsciously, it's there.
Right. Right. Which is why it's important that she is making these observations from a storytelling perspective. I want to acknowledge another writing trick I love that SJM uses at the start of chapter 66, and which personally I feel like I need to use more in my writing. Quote, Bryce didn't know how she wound up on the barge, what she said to Therian to make him pull up, how she climbed off the wave skimmer and onto the boat itself. But it happened fast, enough that Hunt had made it only 3 steps before Bryce was there soaked and wondering if she'd puke. What I love about this is that I don't need to know all the details. I don't need to know how Bryce climbed onto the barge. And honestly, it would just be useless information. SJM doesn't bother us with the details, but what's great about it is that it's not lazy writing. It is in character for Bryce to black out. It demonstrates her rage. It demonstrates her hurt. And from a writing perspective, it's like, work smarter, not harder.
It's true. I want to use this more in my own writing, where it's like, you don't need to be like, Bryce Hens gripped the side of the boat, launched herself. Like, just get there. And you really see where Bryce is emotionally. Like, you are in her mind. You are just as distraught as a reader because you don't really know what's fully happening. And you understand the emotion so clearly without her necessarily having to say, Bryce was super manned. Right now, all Bryce sees is Hunt, and she's charging right for him. Like, there is, does not care about anyone else, does not see anything. It is just Hunt. But even though he's disrupted her reality, he's still the only tether to the reality. Like, he's still the one that she is locked onto. And we don't need to understand the chaos of what's going on. Like, you know, I'm sure the Viper Queen's freaking out. What's Justinian and Victoria doing? Is Therian still on the wave skimmer? You know what I mean? Like, we don't need to worry about all that stuff. And then, like, Micah appears later on, like, immediately. Because she's just so honed in on him. And it makes it hurt more as a reader. Quote, Bryce was distantly aware of Therian, distantly aware of the Viper Queen chuckling. But all she heard was Hunt breathe Bryce. We don't need to know anything else. We just need to know this.
No, they are in their own world. Never mind that everyone's pointing guns at them.
I know.
Who gives a shit?
I can only imagine, like, everyone is out there being like, gun, gun, gun. And Bryce is just in the middle, not giving a flying fuck.
Yeah, it's Elizabeth and Darcy dancing, but in the worst way possible.
Okay, that's an interesting pool, but I see it.
But you, like,
I see it, yeah.
If you think about that scene from the 2005 Keira Knightley.
Yeah, no, I see
Pride
it.
Pride and Prejudice. Okay, great.
I love it.
Thank you. They're in their own world.
It's a hell of a comparison. One's super romantic. This one's
I don't know. Elizabeth didn't like Darcy all that much at the time.
I know, but, like, it was hot.
It was hot.
It was sexiest movie there ever was.
I also want to talk about something Jack previously mentioned about Hunt's wings. Quote, of course she hadn't recognized him from a distance. He had no wings, but the powerful build, the height, the angle of his head, that was all him. I love that Bryce calls out the fact that Hunt does not have his wings, because there's so much symbolism in him not having his wings. Finding Hunt in this moment, and this treachery and betrayal, it is as if Bryce is seeing Hunt for the first time. His wings in that moment, to me, therefore represent his goodness. And now that they're gone, she can now see the liar beneath him.
Yeah.
And whether or not Hunt is truly, truly bad, truly had bad intentions, I could see and feel from Bryce's perspective that the imagery of his wings underscore this moment and how she sees him now.
Yeah.
And now, without those wings, he is truly fallen.
Yeah. I love that. The just the imagery of, like, he is a fallen angel now. And okay, hear me out. I'm not saying that this is true, but could Hunt have been able to do this with his wings? And I mean that for more from a symbolic point of view, where his wings haven't been tainted and stuff. Like, part of the driver of all this is because they were chopped off.
Right.
And would he have been able to still, I mean, and the answer is yes. He was, like, looking for a place to bring them down. But just the symbolism of it all, like, having been truly fallen now, I don't think, again, this could not have played off from a symbolism point of view if he had his wings. And I also just love that Justinian needed to paint his wings black.
To hide his
wings. To hide them.
Well, and it makes him look more fallen as well, right? Because his wings become invisible, quote unquote. It's just so brilliant because, yes, from a practicality standpoint, it makes sense. But it also makes sense from a symbolic.
This whole scene is so much symbolism done so well.
So well. Fury, like Micah, comes out of the shadows and makes her presence known on this boat. And I have a question. Why can Fury tell the Viper Queen what to do and the Viper Queen listens?
What am I doing right now?
Shaking your head.
I am so mad with Fury. Who is she? Why can she threaten the governor? Why does everyone know her? And why was she in college 2 years ago?
I have to believe she was in college as like undercover. An undercover thing.
Like, I forgot that they met in college. I just assumed that they met partying.
Yeah.
She was in college?
Why?
What are you doing? How old are you, Fury? Yeah. The Fury question of it all makes me mad. Bryce is angry about one thing and one thing only. It's the fact that Hunt kept it a secret. The secret itself, I don't think Bryce cares about. Mm-hmm. You know, if anything, I almost feel like she would have helped him.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, you want some synth to take down Micah and all them?
Let's make like sure it's safe first.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't like it, but we'll help you. You know, on some level, I think she totally understands his reasoning and why he would do it. And again, like borderline, I think she supports it. It's the fact that he did not tell her sooner that is what hurts her the most. Quote, but Bryce just asked days ago? Silence. She said again, you knew about the synth days ago? Her heart. It was her stupid fucking heart that was cracking and cracking and cracking. Like, she just repeats over and over, like, you knew what's, like, what the hell? And, you know, like, just tell people. Mm-hmm. Just tell them the secrets.
It's so tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really feel for Bryce in this situation. But I have to ask, do we believe the level of her devastation? For me, I think the answer is yes. But I don't know if everybody agrees. This whole novel has been about Bryce uncovering the ways people in her life, especially Danica, who she loved the most, have withheld and lied to her. And now Hunt is guilty of that same act of withholding information. I also have to recognize Bryce has been the subject of mockery for years since Danica's death. And I would believe it if she's worried Hunt was mocking her behind her back about the synth over the last few days when she was so focused on it.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, he figured out the truth and for nearly a week, he'd said nothing to her. Had let her go on and on about how much she loved her friend, how great Danica had been, and had led her in fucking circles.
The Danica line does not help.
Yeah.
Because she's been primed and ready for being deceived all around. But I also feel like it does help her forgive Hunt sooner. Because she's been making all these, and I don't want to call excuses, but like keep saying, I know Danica at her core. This is not her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that that's also made her ready to forgive Hunt.
Yeah, that's a great. If this is the first time she's ever felt betrayed like that.
Yeah.
Then it wouldn't be believable.
Yeah.
But she's had to make concessions for Danica's actions.
Yeah.
This whole novel.
For me, the question isn't necessarily, does this betrayal make sense? Because, like, does, like, her devastation of the betrayal make sense? Because, yeah, like, Hunt's been the one who has been there for her, slash, I'm, like, we were all shocked that Hunt did this. Like, it, you know, to the point where, like, does this make sense? For me, the question becomes, does her forgiveness of him and her actions of wanting to sell herself, essentially, for him make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, Danica has primed her.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Thank you. Therian in this whole scene kind of cracks me up because it's constantly being described that he's holding her back. He's gripping her arm. Here's an example, quote, only Therian's grip was keeping her upright. And that's one of many moments in this where it's like, you know, he's holding her. He has his hand around her waist. And again, Hunt never snaps at him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, Hunt is in no position to be snapping at him. However, I feel like he totally would if it was anyone else. And it comes back to this again that I feel like Hunt is trusting Therian.
Yeah.
Like, he sees how devastated Bryce is. He's probably happy that Therian is the one who's there to be with Bryce.
Yeah.
And it is sweet how much Therian is there for her, just kind of like keeping her upright. It does make me be willing to get a Therian book. Here first. I think I'm going to become a Therian apologist.
Oh my goodness. That's shocking to me. I only feel more questions because while Hunt doesn't snap at Therian, Therian doesn't snap at Hunt.
Yeah. What is going on between the two of them?
And it begs the question, did Therion know Hunt was on the boat?
It also begs the question, were they lovers?
Okay. That's a good question.
Right? I mean, like, it makes sense. But, you know, I agree. There's no way Hunt knew Therion knew.
Right.
There's no way Therion knew. However, the stuff that happens makes me wonder, did Therion know?
Or does Therion trust Hunt enough to be like, I get it, man, but I can't save you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You dug your own grave. I don't know.
Nor will we ever.
Nope. Toward the end of the chapter, before Fury takes her away, Bryce, quote, grabbed the white opal from her pocket and hurled it at Hunt. Hurled it so hard it slammed into Hunt's head. Blood flowed from his temple, as if the halo itself were bleeding. Now remember from last week's episode, the white opal Hunt gave Bryce means joy. And like Jack pointed out last week, opals are brittle, and Hunt has destroyed the joy that this opal represents by destroying Bryce's heart. And I have to recognize, as symbolized through the blood on himself, that Bryce's pain hurts Hunt too. The blood from his temple, think about it this way. A temple is, yes, a part of our head, but it's also a sacred place. It's like an inner sanctum. And Hunt, in this process, has broken his own heart. And it's his own fault, but it still makes me sad.
It is so sad. As a writer, I feel like I would have personally liked to add a little, I mean, granted, this is probably me being heavy-handed, but so saying something like, the brittle gem cracked.
Yeah.
You know? But that's like symbolism being shoved down your throat. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
It didn't have to be in the scene. Hunt could have, in a later scene, been like he pocketed. Saw the blood covered opal and it's, you know, it was cracked from where it fell or whatever. Yeah.
I do like the description of blood kind of coming down from his crown. It's like a reminder of what he chose.
Yeah. Well, and it just, again, it drives the fallen imagery home, because isn't it supposed to be a crown of thorns?
Yeah. Yeah. But when I say what he chose, in case someone's like, what the hell does that mean? Like the fact that he chose this mini rebellion.
Yep. It's reaffirming the crown on his head.
Yep.
I also want to say Hunt pisses me off as much as I also empathize. Quote, Bryce, your heart was already so broken, and the last thing I ever wanted to do was, it's not the time, bruh.
No, the way I gasped when he said that, I was like, excuse me, you do not get to make that decision.
You don't say that shit.
No, and also, she was healing your broken ass, too.
Yeah, it's true.
She was taking care of you. And it's the whole, like, I know better than you. That is some Edward Cullen bullshit.
I agree.
Also, I could not stop laughing that Hunt spills it all at the end. Quote, I messaged them that it was over and they got spooked, contacted the Viper Queen and insisted it was going down tonight. Now, I always get annoyed in books when I'm just like, just tell the truth right away, you know, and I hate when in books are like, I just want, you know, they're thinking about the answer and they just won't be able to say it. But at the same time, I'm listening to this. I'm like, what a fucking narc.
He has to know they're all doomed anyway.
Right.
But he just does not give a shit.
Like Justinian and Victoria are probably there and be like, sir, we were on the same team. Yeah, and he's like, it was them.
It's true.
They're the ones who did it. I wanted nothing to do with this.
It was very childish.
Baby, please come back. Yeah. It was just like, okay, wow. You have like no. Martha Stewart went to jail because she wasn't going to spill anything.
Yeah.
He does not give a fuck.
Nope.
We start chapter 67 with Rune waiting for Bryce in the lobby of her apartment. And this is like the first time I really teared up.
Aww.
Like where I was like, Rune was there for her.
Yeah.
He just loves her so much.
He loves her so much.
And she treats him like shit.
Yeah. We'll have to talk about that.
Yeah.
The absence of Hunt makes Bryce feel like her apartment is, quote, dark and hollow and foreign. Quote, every piece of clothing and gear belonging to Hunt was like an asp, ready to strike. I know the imagery of an asp is used pretty frequently by SJM, and I've never stopped to wonder what an asp symbolizes other than being a snake, you know. And apparently asps, which are venomous snakes, are the symbol of royalty in ancient Egypt, and Cleopatra is said to have killed herself with asp venom. Asp venom in ancient Egypt was also used in executions for those who were dignified enough to deserve better than a typical execution. And I bring this up not because it's like, oh, because Bryce is a princess. That's not it. It just felt like it didn't have to be an asp. Mm-hmm. It could have been a snake. It could have been, I don't know. It just...
Well, it makes sense to me.
Go ahead.
Right? The quote you have here is, every piece of clothing and gear belonged to Hunt like an asp ready to strike. I think the symbolism is between Cleopatra and the fact that she famously, allegedly used asp venom to kill herself. It's like all of these moments, all of this gear, all of this is slowly killing Hunt.
Well, I would actually almost say the opposite, that it's slowly killing Bryce. Like, she allowed these asps.
Oh, I forgot. We're back into Bryce's apartment. Yes, yeah. It's slowly killing Bryce. For a second, I was like, we're in the cell with him. No, I agreed. But like the symbolism's still there that these things represent a slow death.
Yep. And didn't Cleopatra kill herself after her lover died?
Yeah.
So that adds an extra layer there. Like,
I know.
Hunt is dead to her.
Yeah.
And evidence of him is killing her.
Yep.
Thank you for reminding me of my train of thought.
You're welcome. Thank you for reminding me that we're in Bryce's apartment.
Bryce pukes at this moment, which reminds us of her humanity, and I think also demonstrates just how much pain she's in right now. Bryce is especially bothered by Hunt's blood on the couch. And why do we think that is?
Before I give that answer... When she throws up, Rune goes over and holds her.
And takes care of her.
Rune.
I love Rune.
God, I love Rune. So back to the question of the blood on the couch, right? It's a reminder of the sexual encounter between Bryce and Hunt. Quote, Rune picked her up and carried her to the couch, keeping away from the spot where she yielded herself entirely to Hunt. The blood evidence really reminds me a lot of like when women have sex for the first time, in theory. It's, women may not bleed the first time, may not bleed at all. Virginity is a construct. So a lot of times, historically, the sheets had to be checked, like the wedding night, to make sure that it actually happened.
Right. And that the marriage was consummated.
And that she was a virgin.
Right.
You know, like women would sometimes have to have little vials of chicken blood or something just to make sure that they actually did bleed something there. And the quote unquote virginal blood on the white couch is now a stain and not a marker of what could have been a sweet moment. It's like, yeah, blood, white couch, all that stuff. I also love that Rune just kind of was like, I smell shit in here.
It doesn't say anything.
We're not going to say anything about it. I was also thinking, like, why'd you carry her to the couch, my man?
Yeah.
Take her to the bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless he, like, walked in, smelled sex, was like, I'm staying away from that bedroom. Yeah. And then is like, damn it. It's on the couch.
The blood is also symbolic of Bryce giving Hunt power over her heart, only for him to destroy it immediately. I like what you're talking about the kind of virginal nature of this. The irony for me is that it's Hunt's blood. It's not Bryce's blood.
Yeah.
Which, if we think about it symbolically, is that the moment when he truly is over Shahar.
Yeah.
And is fully Team Bryce.
Yep.
Just a thought.
Yeah, I love it.
Bryce broke his Shahar hymen. I don't know.
What? I don't know. I don't know. That's like, should I say? Wow.
We don't have to keep that.
No, we are. I'm what? Okay. I'm on board.
Let's also talk about this other reason for Bryce's unhappiness, which we didn't talk about in the last chapter, but is very relevant here. Quote, no better than a bunch of drug addicts. That's what Hunt had implied. She and Danica had been no better than two addicts, inhaling and snorting everything they could get their hands on. It wasn't like that. Hadn't been like that. It had been stupid, but it had been for fun, for distraction and release, never for something dark. And this is a really, really fine line.
Mm-hmm.
And I empathize with Bryce, but I actually don't know who I believe in this moment. And the reason for it is this. In college, I had a lighter. that's okay. I don't know if you remember this. I had it during while you were still around. before you went to your master's.
Okay, cool.
And before I became an alcoholic.
Okay, just the way you said it.
And it begs the question, what is the difference between having fun and having an addiction? Is it other people's perception or is it your own lack of self-awareness? And I think that that's a really, really difficult question to ask yourself when you're looking back on that time.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I'm going to use our time in college together versus, I know afterwards you had a darker period with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I had a darker period with alcohol towards my late 20s. And one I reflect on fondly, the other one I look back at and say, that was a problem.
Yeah.
I was not an alcoholic, but I wasn't using alcohol for fun.
Right.
And I would even say that, like, in our college years, let me know if I should delete this or not. We drank.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were my bad influence.
I was. Like, we mixed substances.
Yeah. Like, you know, we went to Vegas, we partied, but I don't feel like, again, I get the whole idea of like malintent
mm-hmm.
versus fun.
Well, I don't know if it's malintent or if it's coping.
Coping. Okay. Coping. We'll call it coping because that's like addiction sometimes comes from coping. Sometimes addiction is addiction. But, you know, you and I like to imagine like we were just having fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there was a time that we needed to stop, we could have stopped. Later on, we both had our experiences and I can see that difference.
Yeah.
Granted, we were not on the drugs that Bryce and Danica were on, mainly because those don't exist. But
but if we think of their real world equivalent.
Yeah, that was not our scene. But had it been, I still don't think it was. Again, we were college having fun. And that's what Bryce was, in college having fun.
Right. I think that, though that might be true for Bryce, we don't know if that's true for Danica. Because oftentimes, because I think about my darker period, my friends who were my drinking buddies did not know how bad it was for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so from their perspective, it was just having fun. It was normal. But from my perspective, it was worse.
But I thought it was all kind of, that all was made up. Like, I don't think Danica was necessarily, she wasn't using drugs in synth.
If we're looking at it as a reader for the first time,
yeah.
We're not sure.
I think Bryce has always called out Danica's heart
mm-hmm.
throughout of like, no, I know her. Yes, I may not know all of her secrets, but I know her.
Yeah.
And I'm personally using that as my compass. Yeah. But the hell if I know. Yeah, that's fine. That's fair. Justice for Rune. That's the beginning of my section right here. He is there for her when she arrives.
Yeah.
He holds her when she's sick and carries her back to the couch. Quote, she was shaking so hard, her bones might snap. Rune's grip on her tightened like he could hold her together. And then she does him so dirty. She does him so, so dirty later on in a bit. And currently, this is like the one man who hasn't betrayed her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, he did say some mean shit to her, but that man has groveled.
Yeah.
That man has apologized.
Yep.
And
he has shown up consistently throughout this novel.
Without question, mm-hmm. without any kind of delay.
Yep.
Just like, don't lash out to the one man who has been there for you.
Yeah. I have no comments.
Justice for Rune.
We see at the end of this chapter that Hunt's lies about the synth have been extrapolated in Bryce's mind such that all her good memories of their time together must therefore be lies as well.
Mm-hmm.
If Hunt lied about this one thing, he was always lying.
Yep.
Which is a wrong assumption, but a very, very easy slippery slope that I think all of us are guilty of.
Yes.
Quote, Hunt must have known she was getting close to learning the truth when she'd shown him the trial videos. So he'd spun her lies about a happy ending for the two of them, a future for them, had distracted her with his mouth and hands. And she fills in the gaps of her understanding with more wrong assumptions. And it's really, really sad because now everything is tainted.
Mm-hmm.
We then move into part four of this novel, The Ravine. A ravine is a deep, narrow gorge with steep sides. And I bring that up because I feel like Bryce is going to be on the edge of this ravine, on the edge of a precipice for the rest of this novel. So I think it's fitting that it is the ravine now.
It's also Thanatos, who's like the Prince of Hell. Is there a connection there? I don't know, but I'm putting it there.
That's a good point. Hunt is forced to watch his friends be tortured and killed. There's a video feed and it's on the screen and he just watches it. Justinian slowly bleed out and asphyxiate.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria's in a box. And it's really, really, I don't know what the right word is. Nasty is what I'm going to go with right now. It's just, okay.
It's mean.
It's
good torture.
I mean, top notch torture. Good job.
I mean, I applaud this torture.
I applaud the creativity. However, from Hunt's perspective, this is just like, wow. That is awful to have to witness and then have in your memory and you're, you know, going to live for 1,000 years. Like,
and he's
rough.
And he hasn't been touched. He is in a nice, clean cell. He's been not forgiven, but not passed up on. But he's just there unharmed watching this all go down.
Which adds an extra layer of guilt.
Yep.
Because he is just as guilty as they are.
Absolutely. I mean, technically less because he wanted to back down.
And he narked. So,
you know. Little bitch. But
quote, the wound on his temple had healed, but he hadn't bothered to wash away the blood streaking down his cheek and jaw. This is, again, just symbolic of Bryce's pain and Hunt's own pain. And he's not willing to wash away the evidence because he wants to kind of
simmer in it.
Yeah, he wants to simmer in that evidence.
I mean, it's also, again, pretty significant that the only wound he has is from Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
The only blood that's been drawn is from Bryce.
Yep.
Meanwhile, his friends are being brutalized.
Yep.
Justinian is crucified and Victoria is put in a box to be forgotten forever.
It's awful.
I know. Immediately when you think of crucifixion, I personally think Jesus. You know, he's got the big... I was about to say he's got a big stake in it.
Oh my gosh.
That's not the right word. That's his thing.
That's Christianity's thing.
Yeah, that's Christianity's thing. But this is just a reminder that crucifixion is older than Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It was used way before him. And it's a legendary type of punishment. It's meant to put them on display.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to remind people that it's not like every single thing doesn't have to be a Christian-related concept.
Right.
So just, you know, putting that reminder there.
I think crucifixion comes from the Romans, right?
Greek.
Is it Greek?
Yeah.
And then I'm sure the Romans stole it because the Romans were occupying Jerusalem.
Romans steal everything.
Yeah, they do. The Romans were occupying Jerusalem at the time
that
Jesus was supposedly alive. So, yeah, it is beyond Christianity. It's just part of the world's history.
Yeah. And not a great world's history.
Nope.
Humans suck.
Humans are terrible.
Right? Also, I love that I'm saying I love her Victoria's punishment. But it's just so, I don't know, like particularly horrible.
Mm-hmm.
She's been put in a box and they have the blood dripping on the box. And it's so Poe to me. Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes.
Like it's very Telltale Heart. It's very The Raven.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, it's just, ooh. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. Yep. I do too.
It's great awful. Torture.
At this point, I want to talk a little bit about Hunt and how this translates to who Hunt is in Flame and Shadow. And I don't think this is too spoilerific, but if you haven't read Flame and Shadow and you want to avoid all references to it, I would skip for a minute or two. So we see here, as Hunt is ruminating on what has happened and his friends and Bryce, we see that his motivations are just like Bryce's will be in Flame and Shadow. Oh, and this is Hunt talking to Isaiah, by the way. Quote, nothing's changed since Mount Hermon. Nothing has gotten better. We decided it was time. No more fucking bargains with Micah. No more deaths for deaths. Just the ones we choose. They'd planned to do it at the summit, and afterward, they'd make their way to Pangaea, to the Eternal City, and finish what was started long ago. When does Hunt realize that this plan is not worth it, and he's willing to give it all up? Quote, not after these weeks with Bryce, not after what they'd done on that couch. And this never changes about Hunt. Yes, he wants the angel hierarchies to go away. Yes, he wants the Asteri dead. But first and foremost, his only concern is about living the rest of his life with Bryce and keeping her safe.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so consistent in this. And we yes. see that in Flame and Shadow, that at the end of the day, their lives and their future are not worth it.
We see it in Flame and Shadow. And again, spoiler Hoseb. But we also see it, like, all of Hoseb is him being like, I don't want to get involved. Mm-hmm. I don't want us to go down this rabbit hole. I think we leave it alone.
Yeah.
And then same thing with Flame and Shadow. I don't want to get involved. I don't want to do this. And this is the moment he decides that.
Right.
And
yep.
this is that pivotal, pivotal moment where Hunt has no desire to do anything. He has decided Bryce is endgame.
Yep.
She's the goals. There's no life without a future with Bryce.
Right. And who cares who's ruling the world? I just want to be with Bryce.
Right? And he has to deprogram that from his brain.
Yeah.
We haven't done analysis on CC3, but I, at this point, present me, almost thinks he never really does deprogram from his brain.
Oh,
no. She just gets her way.
Exactly. Exactly. At the end of the day, he's going to feel this consistently, but he loves Bryce enough to support her no matter what.
Yeah. I don't know, like, just kind of give him some leeway here.
I mean,
this was a traumatic event.
Very traumatic.
So, of course, he's not going to want to, he's going to resist.
Right.
We finally get a timeline. Quote, how long have you three been planning this shit? Since I killed those three drug lords. I want to confirm, that's like when he killed those three drug lords and he was super messed up and then Bryce cleaned him up, right? Like, that's the night?
I have no idea.
We don't know which drug lords.
Yeah.
How long ago? So I want to say that that's when it happened. And it makes sense because, like, those deaths probably, I mean, we know it messed him up. That was the moment that he was really broken and Bryce had to put him back together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably what inspired him to do all this. But it's almost like it could have inspired him to do the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you have Bryce here taking care of him and he chooses to go one direction.
Yeah.
When another one was a different option.
Yeah. He had a better option.
Yeah.
I want to go back to the quote I read earlier about how Hunt changed his mind about the plans with Victoria and Isaiah after Bryce and after what they'd done on that couch. And it's going back to this idea of virginal consummating a marriage. It does feel like with the blood on the couch and the way Hunt is like, the couch, that moment changed everything. They did consummate a marriage. Like, that is the wedding we're never getting between these two.
That was it, guys.
That's.
You missed the wedding? There it was.
That was the wedding. While Isaiah and Hunt are talking, and, you know, Isaiah is upset, rightly so. It's his friend he also must be feeling betrayed right now. Hunt lashes out at Isaiah and says, quote, you might be able to accept the bit in your mouth, but I never will. And I just have to point this out because that is a comparison to animals, specifically horses. And Hunt is saying, you're no better than an animal being led around by your master, but I refuse to be that animal.
It also goes against his own thought process. You know, like, again, we were saying that this is the moment he decides that Bryce and their future is what matters. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, like, I'll never accept the bit. He will.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do anything else. His personality, I don't know how I feel about this.
I think he is feeling defensive of his choices. Yes,
yes.
He knows he made a wrong choice. But you know when you made a wrong choice and people keep telling you you made a wrong choice?
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you have to defend the wrong choice even though you didn't want to make it.
Yeah. I mean, especially since Isaiah is, like, dropping truth bombs left and right.
Right.
At one point, Hunt says, Bryce had nothing to do with this, and she didn't know. And Isaiah says, yeah, no, I know, shit. Bro. Everyone saw how devastated she was. Right.
And then also, he says at one point, I thought you had a reason to keep living for this. And that's when Hunt says, you know, I won't accept the bit. And it's because Isaiah's basically slapped him in the face.
Yeah.
Isaiah is right. Hunt had a reason to keep living and to do better.
Yep.
But Hunt has to justify why, ultimately, he did make the choices he made.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in the chapter, we switch over to Bryce's point of view, and she's in the gallery. Lahaba's talking about Hunt, but Bryce won't have it. And she reflects that Hypaxia has successfully created a synth antidote and gave it to Bryce. And Bryce just doesn't know what to do with it anymore because things are over. And more than that, it's become a symbol to her. Quote, a silent reminder of what she and Hunt had shared that day at the Meadowitch's office. Bryce is so hurt right now that she can't even see the good that came of her interactions with Hunt, that something worth having actually was created because of their genuine care for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because that wouldn't have happened if Hunt didn't care about Bryce
and
force her to go to a Meadowitch. Bryce would have just...
Well, also, Bryce was inspired to go to the Meadowitch. Because of him, too.
Right, right. And to me, the synth antidote is symbolic of the genuineness of their bond. But Bryce can't see that. It's an unwanted reminder of Hunt.
I mean, it goes back to their first kiss, which is, it was very brief, very sweet. And it's when Hypaxia was pulling out the poison. And the synth is no longer an antidote. It's back to being the poison.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great point.
Thank you for listening to part one of this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Tune in Thursday for part two, where we finish covering this week's chapters.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo.
Bye!